Thank you, Colin. I am very excited to be here with my IMS pin, although I won this IMS pin getting a Learning Impact Award myself, or maybe I give a talk or something. I don't know how I got this pin, but I'm wearing it proudly. So, like always, I have 1.5 times as many slides as I should, and so I'm going to talk fast, I'm going to talk loud, and luckily it's late in the afternoon, and so maybe it'll make it more difficult for you to read email during my talk. So, if you Google the word functionality mashup, you'll find my name on the first 50 pages, because I've been sort of branding this word functionality mashup for about 3 years now. And basically, so I'm going to associate LTI with functionality mashup. And the idea is that if we don't adopt Facebook-like capabilities in teaching and learning environments, then the students will adopt Facebook to do their teaching and learning, and pretty soon we'll lose a lot of what we have, I think, in current learning management systems, and that is identity, institutional touch, et cetera, that I think are good things that make Facebook not exactly the right way to teach, but the ideas that Facebook has, and I think you've heard this from a number of speakers, that in many ways Facebook really needs to help us redefine how we do teaching and learning. So some of us have been doing this for a long time. I've got a video back when there was a WebCT and there was a guy named Chris Vento, and we were all in Sheffield, England. I think there's only two people that participated in the Sheffield demo of IMS LTI 1.0 and are going to participate tomorrow in the demo, and that'd be me and Bob Alcorn. Everyone else has found something else to do, and so Bob Alcorn and I sort of this is our cross to bear for as long as it is until it was. I walked out of that meeting so excited about IMS LTI 1.0, and I became an evangelist for IMS LTI 1.0. And we actually, when we debated what I should be called as my title in IMS when I was hired, I was going to be called evangelist. I was just going to be evangelist. We kind of figured that there are some connotations that doesn't work, but amongst us in this room, evangelist is a pretty good thing that describes what it is that I'm going to be doing. So I walked out and I became an unpaid evangelist for IMS Learning Tools Interoperability 1.0. And I was really disappointed because, like, no one except me adopted it, basically. And it had a few problems, had a couple problems. It was, our WSDL turned out to be kind of painful, didn't work so well in PHP, and it did a simple set of things, and it was like the most complicated possible way to solve a really simple problem. And so everyone went out and solved the problem themselves in a much simpler way. And my own beloved Sakai community quickly invented a thing they called the link tool, which schleps a couple parameters on PHP and sends them across, signs them with a thing. And then people say, well, I can hook something into Sakai in an hour with this thing. And it's like, I was so depressed because they didn't take my baby here, but instead they whipped up their own thing and completely proprietary, not standards-based, because this was too hard. So when we come back to LTI 2.0, and by the way, this section discusses a standard that's under development and may change. Matter of fact, at lunch it started to change already. So some of this may change, but that's okay. I'm really just educating here. So I didn't want to make the same mistakes when we did LTI 2, and so I've been playing with this, and I've been writing LTI code like continuously for 4 years, but no one ever seems to want to use it. But the basic idea was stolen from PowerLinks. Chris Bento came up with the idea a long time ago, and you heard Bob Alcorn talk about Blackboard's new direction with the proxy tool approach and the whole APIs. And to some degree, I've been asking, saying, please just give us PowerLinks. And then Blackboard would say, well, that wasn't really invented here. I mean, they didn't say it exactly like that. But they said, let us do something that's kind of like PowerLinks, but sort of fits our world a little better. And that's what the Blackboard proxy tool is. And I'm very excited that Blackboard is kind of picking this whole mashup and functionality mashup in terms of their architecture going forward. And it's a real simple concept. You have a proxy tool in your learning management system. You click on it. It sort of chatters to some externally hosted tool and then sets up sessions or gets URLs back. And then it throws it into either an iframe or proxies the content or does something else. But then all the interaction happens with the tool, and then you click on something else in the LMS, and you move to a new page. So LTI 2.0 has been going, I think, almost for about 2 years. Our leads are Bruno von Heitzdahl from Wimba and Chris Moffitt of Microsoft, and they're doing a great job. Their organizations have an absolute sort of essential need for this standard, and so you get the right people to lead, and good things happen. And basically the idea here was not just to do what we did in LTI-1, and that is kind of a fire and forget launching capability, but instead get to the point where it was deeply integrated into learning management systems at effectively that add resource spot. So you could have an externally hosted tool that showed up in add resource and you really couldn't tell the difference. And when you see the demo tomorrow and you see Bruno do the Moodle demo, it's going to be really boring because the externally hosted tool just looks like an internally hosted tool, and it's a lot of work to get it to look just that boring. And so watch closely, and I told Bruno to keep saying, yeah, that works great, but it's really complex. I'll click here. Yeah, that works great, but it's really complex. And so, unfortunately, the best demos are the ones that are totally understated, because that means that it just works quite naturally and quite natively. High-level scenarios. Three real high-level scenarios. One is the administrator of a learning management system installs the tool and establishes a pretty strong trust relationship between the external tools. So we know it's coming from Pearson, and by golly, we're going to let it set grades. We're going to put a certificate over there. We're going to have a phone call. We're going to do some heavyweight setup to the point where users end up just putting these tools in their system, and they don't even really know where they're coming from. Okay, it's something where the administrator puts it in, and users just place it. Then there's this generic tool, kind of like an RSS feed tool, where you pop it into your course, and then you configure it with a URL, and you pop that in. And then some kind of a blend between those two things is the put it in a cartridge and then load that thing into a course, and then it kind of launches, but then sends a bunch of identity and course information along with it. So the administrator takes one of these proxy tools and installs it so it appears to be as a regular tool, and then the administrator is going to configure some kind of a sandbox. It says, okay, we trust Pearson to get roster information, set grades, check, check, no check. Pretty much it's the same as how Facebook does it. You sandbox these things. And in this situation, the administrator is installing it and establishing a trust relationship with the external tool with exchange of key material, and so the sandboxing is being done on a system-by-system basis, and the instructor really just inherits that sandboxing without noticing it. So the tool may even at this point have permission to connect asynchronously, say to deliver large sets of results that were computed offline or something. We want to set up enough security so that the tool can get all the way back into the system even when it's not part of a launch process. That was probably one of the many big mistakes we made in LTI-1 is that we made the ability for the external tool to talk back to the system only part of the launch context, and the only thing we could take back was A grade. And that just wasn't very exciting, and it just didn't really, it made it harder actually. It made it harder to adopt. Okay. I mean, the other thing that's kind of cool about this is the notion that you can actually do some of your course shell configuration from the tool externally, meaning it can make a web service call and say, stick a copy of me inside your course right now. Click, click, click. So you're clicking on add Wimba classroom, and you haven't even clicked on a Wimba server to do that, and it sneaks the thing, and then pop, up comes another button inside your thing. And so that's the idea, is that you can do so many things from outside in LTI-2 that you could only do from inside before. Really, LTI-2, Bruno is kind of the genius behind LTI-2, and he really was trying to say, let's be like a building block. Let's be like a Moodle module, except then remote everything. So all the kind of things that a building block can do or a Moodle module could do, we wanted to make it so an external tool could do over web services. So the one of my favorite ones is the instructor mashup. I'm always fancying the idea of instructors being in charge and students being in charge, and everybody being in charge of their own stuff. So YouTube is kind of our model. You go to YouTube, you upload some stuff, you grab a URL, you paste it into something, and bingo, bingo, you're all set up. And so it's just like an RSS feed at that point. And so YouTube was kind of our model. And again, the instructor now is going to be the sandboxer. So at some point, the instructor is going to decide what the instructor wants to trust this particular weird application. Who knows if we trust it or not? And then the administrator may be able to set an inheritance sandbox that all the instructors that get. So the instructors can't give out more permission, for example, FERPA or whatever. The instructors can't give away permission that the administrators don't want to give away. Common cartridge is another delivery mechanism for tools interoperability. So you can imagine a common cartridge would contain a pointer to a host that we already trust. We've established key relationships. Then things are really smooth. It just starts to function like an internal tool. The administrator's already set the sandbox up. Away we go. Or the teacher uploads a course cartridge, and then all of a sudden it's an instructor sandbox situation. Instructor may have to do a little more sandboxing. There may be less information available. So we have this thing at University of Michigan we call SiteMaker. We did Sakai at University of Michigan with many other people, but we also had this thing called SiteMaker. SiteMaker was always the little brother to Sakai. And the poor guys that ran SiteMaker for the last 5 years have been like, operating in the shadow of Big Brother all the time, and they're trying to get resources, and they get like $10,000, and we get like $5 million, and they get like $20,000. And the poor guys just felt really bad about this. Turns out SiteMaker is a pretty cool tool, and a lot of people really like it. It's kind of like a way to put buttons up in kind of a Joomla-like thing. It's got this cool thing called data tables. But the exciting thing about this, it's written in Apple Web Objects. We paid someone to write this in Apple's Web Objects. Michigan had a passing fancy with Apple Web Objects technology, and this particular software was written during that phase where we liked Web Objects. And everyone kept saying, let's rewrite this. And so finally, we all became friends, and the CIO said, you guys sit down and you come up with strategy. I'm not giving money to either of you until you quit fighting amongst yourselves. And so he said, we're not going to rewrite Sakai. We're not going to rewrite SiteMaker in Sakai. So we decided that instead what we would do is we would take an early draft of LTI2 and launch it. And basically, we focused as much as we could on the ease of workflow on the faculty mashing this thing up. And this is where we came up with the YouTube model, and we'll have this in production this fall. So this is the scenario. In the SiteMaker tool, in the configuration of it, there's an additional button called Configure Remote Participants. You click on that, and there's a password box that you can change anytime you want in the external tool, and it gives you a URL to cut and paste, just like YouTube, into the LTI consumer. So that's what you do in Sakai. You paste in the URL, you paste in the password. Now, if the password changes, you're going to have to update this password so you can sever this connection at any time under instructor control, and then poof, you're done, right? That was it. I mean, it's just that fast. Go over here, stick a thing, copy, paste, hit refresh, and bingo, the students are using that external tool. That's the kind of thing that RSS gives us, and that's the kind of thing. And we're still exchanging identity and information and keys and all kinds of stuff going on behind the scenes. So it's really exciting. That's just the mashup scenario, of course. The other scenarios are a bit more complex, but I wanted to kind of motivate you. You may have heard that IMS and Sakai jointly applied for a Google Summer of Code, and we were quite excited to be accepted. Turns out that getting accepted as an open source project is the easy part of Google Summer of Code. The hard part is actually delivering the code in a very short period of time over the summer with a bunch of undergraduate students. So the idea was to take some systems that we might not otherwise the market might not build learning tools interoperability things for, and get those built by students and see how far we would go with that. And make it tool interoperability more interesting because there's more things to interoperate with. And so we were awarded 3 Google Summer Codes. Catherine Edwards from Gill University is going to do a producer for Sakai. And the idea there, all my students just picked the hardest things, right? I had a whole bunch of easy, like make a consumer for Drupal. It's like I could do that in an hour, which means that it would be very successful because sooner or later over the summer we would have finished that bit of code because I'd have just handed it to them. But instead they gravitated toward what I marked as the most difficult and challenging problems in the Google Summer Code. So LTI producer for Sakai means that you can do that little cut and paste bit, except the Sakai tool is what you're putting into your LMS, right? So you can use Sakai capabilities now. And I ran into some dudes, thanks to my frequent trips to Barcelona at the at the Polytechnic University of Catalonia. I finally have run into somebody I was trying to meet for the longest time, and that's a senior Moodle committer. Okay, Mark Allier, who's a good heart heavy metal singer, and he's also a senior committer in the Moodle community, is also interested in helping with this. And so one of the things, and this is an IMS thing, I did it with Sakai because IMS is not yet an open source organization. I hope we soon to become an open source organization. But basically, they're going to produce an IMS Moodle producer for IMS tools and interoperability. So then I can put, if I get it all right, I can put Sakai into Moodle and Moodle into Sakai by September. And we'll see. It's going to be a busy summer. So you see a picture of Catherine, and you see a picture of Mark Allier and Jordy as well. And there's a third one that's really just a Sakai modification. So we're going to do a demonstration of this. This is kind of an advertisement for tomorrow. It's kind of like watching Christians be eaten by lions, if you're into that sort of thing. If it works well, you can be very impressed. If it fails, then at least you can be entertained by the failures. So I'll give you a sneak preview, but just don't blink, okay? So some of these are screenshots. We don't currently still have them working. This is one of those. Blackboard talking to Wimba. Microsoft SharePoint talking to Wimba, Sakai talking to Wimba. Wimba features a lot in these first ones. This is Moodle talking to Icodian. This is Sakai talking to Icodian with what we call pull content, which is the content can be stored. If the SCO can actually be in Sakai or anywhere else on the web, Icodian pulls the content down and then runs the SCORM player on that. That's really exciting because you can watch it do it because it says, oh, let me make this SCO for you. And then it pulls it down and then it plays the thing. This would be SharePoint doing Icodian. And you could put the SCO in SharePoint. This is SharePoint talking to uCompass. I did this one last night at midnight. uCompass is in Perl. Luckily, I did a Perl one last week, so I had some Perl code to do some of this. This is uCompass playing an OpenLearn common cartridge inside of Microsoft SharePoint. This is uCompass playing QTI2 inside Microsoft SharePoint. Okay. So there's a lot of people to thank here. A lot of people worked really hard in the last year and a half. Wimba gets like a super duper gold star because they did so much that it's completely illogical how much they've invested in this, and we all should give them a round of applause. But others have invested as well. As a matter of fact, Microsoft has invested financially, and this is one of the things I hope to do in the future is gather funds and then hire contractors to write open source code. So it turns out it's easier to get money out of Microsoft than it is to have them write code and then get the intellectual property out of Microsoft. So we took the easy way out and just got money out of Microsoft and then hired someone and told them they had to write it open source and it'll be put up on CodePlex in about a month or so. And that also makes it easier for me to go to Angel and say, hey, man, I've got some open source .NET stuff that'll make your life easier, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? And that's the whole idea. The next person has their job easier and easier because every time we build something, I carry it around on a USB stick with me as I go, then it gets easier and easier and easier. uCompass, Icodian, Pearson, University of Michigan as well. So I am the IMS Developer Network Coordinator. You get an idea of how I'm going to do this. I'm going to talk really loud and really fast, and that's how I'm going to make the IMS Developer Network work. The whole idea, as Colin said at the beginning, is improve the in-the-field availability. That's tech support from home. In-the-field availability of standards compliant implementations in real production. Right, that's my metric as far as I'm concerned. These things have to be in production. I love doing demo code. It's really fun. Do stuff at midnight on the 14th floor. And I'm going to do this by developing reusable sample bits, making them open source, absolutely clean intellectual property, using, I believe, we'll use the Apache license and the Apache contributor. So it's absolutely commercial friendly. You can take this, do whatever you want with it, stick it deep inside a commercial product. If we never see it again, we don't care. What we want is the products to work. I'm also going to run around and be go between developers, right? I don't think of this as the same as the Microsoft Developer Network nor the Apple Developer Network, which is primarily a PR operation that sends you DVDs in the mail, you know, every couple of months, right? This is a network of developers because IMS doesn't have the developers. Now, it's not like we're going to write everything and then outreach to everybody. It's like I'm going to go around and grab stuff from people, hand them a contribution agreement, and then give it to other people. That's the whole idea. It's like a token ring developer network as compared to a star developer network. I'm the token. So the return on investment, I think this developer network with a token ring model is going to work pretty well. The other thing that's going to happen is once we get a little better, there'll be a bit of a push of information, so we will become a bit like the Microsoft and the Apple developer network in that the idea is you don't have to send a developer to every single thing. When things get exciting, meaning a couple of implementations start to firm up, well, what we're going to do then is I'll start pushing this, right? You'll get that 12,000 member mailing list, there'll be a webinar, source code starts coming out, and so the idea is, you don't need to have 40 implementations while you're working on the spec, but we want to move from like 3 implementations to 10 implementations quickly, not after the spec is out, but as the spec comes into what I call final approach. So part of what my job will be is to say, hey, you and you and you, we're coming into final approach on this particular specification. You got a way to work it into your release schedule, yada, yada, yada. And so the idea is to use the developer network to keep developers aware of what's going on, and I want your developers still to come to one or two or whatever groups that your organization contributes the most to, but the ones that you're not involved in, that's where I'll keep the awareness up to through the developer network. So my next steps, and I'm starting this right away, is we want to develop a legal structure for the developer network. Contribution agreements, SVN servers, Apache license. I think this will be straightforward. I've done this wrong enough times that I think this time I'll do it right away rather than wrong a few times and then fix it. We may create a thing called LTI Alliance. I think Kevin has done a great job with Common Cartridge Alliance because it makes things more approachable. When you can get to something for $100, it really reduces the barriers to entry. If you saw Rob's initial slide, he said kind of our strategy is Common Cartridge, LTI, and Learner Information Services, right? So you kind of see the pattern there, right? You've got the developer network, which is the big thing. You've got the contributing member, which is this big. You've got the developer network, which is this big. And then you got these alliances. And these are ways to bring people in and get the community broader and then get more money over time when the value proposition is right for those organizations. And I'm really excited about all of those things. I'll certainly be an LTI crazy for a little bit longer, but as other efforts sort of move into this coming towards final approach stage and code starts happening, I'll move into those as well. Make sure you're on our mailing list as these exciting things start to happen if you're not already getting, but the fact that you're at this conference probably means you're already on the mailing list. And feel free to send me email and tell me what you think about how the IMS Developer Network can be improved. And that's my entire talk.